This is the Unseminary Podcast, stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Welcome. My name is Vanessa, the host of this podcast at Unseminary, where our motto is stuff you wish they taught in seminary. I'm joined by the founder of Unseminary, Rich Birch. Hey, bud, how are you?
Hey, Vanessa, how are you doing? How's your week been?
Good, good. Busy, cold, you know, going from shorts on Monday to jeans and sweaters on Friday.
I know, it's crazy, right? I know, it's crazy. But that seems like all across North America. I keep talking to people. I was talking to a guy just yesterday in kind of the Northeast, and he said the same thing. Like, it's the weather has turned very quickly here, which is kind of exciting, I guess. It's a busy time of year in church leadership. I know we're all running in a million directions, so the fall is definitely upon us.
Yes, yes, that's so exciting. Fall is my favorite season. I'm excited to kick off some new stuff in my life this fall. And nice. Yeah, the color's changing. It's the best season.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so beautiful around here this time of year with all the different colors. It's amazing. That is one of the things I do like about living where we live.
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Nice. So today our podcast is entitled Seven Ways Smartphones Have Changed People at Your Church and What to Do About It. So, Rich, why'd you write it?
Oh, okay. That's great. Great question. So this is the 10-year anniversary of the iPhone, which although there were smartphones before that, the iPhone really was a significant inflection point. And I just got thinking about that. There's a number of articles out there that people have written that are like, smartphones are terrible. They're killing people. And that's not really my, you know, banter by any means. I really have tried to pull together ways that smartphones have changed the people in our churches and then what we should do about it. So, you know, the reality of it is that these little pieces of glass and plastic that are in most of our people's pockets are have changed them, and just want us to be thinking about that as we're leading this fall at our churches.
Yeah, that's awesome. I can't believe how much cell phones have changed our lives.
It's true. It's hard to imagine actually life before it, right? Like
it really is.
It's crazy. Like I've got teenagers, and you know, it's amazing for them. They've their entire conscious life, they've, you know, lived with or had these phones around them, which is amazing. It's made a huge difference in people's lives for sure.
Yeah. Huge difference in parenting, I bet too.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, our first point here is hundreds of friends within reach at a moment's notice.
So the interesting thing about, smartphones is they really grew up at the same time as the social web. So, you know, this mm-hmm. is Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, you know, and these really two technologies have flourished together really hand in hand. It's hard to imagine actually Facebook without the app. It's hard to imagine Instagram was originally an app. It then backed into the web. It's those two things really happened at the same time. And what has happened is the outcome of that is we literally have hundreds of people. Most of the folks in your church have hundreds of their closest contacts within reach at any moment's notice, during the entire day. And did you remember the ice bucket challenge? Vanessa, did you do that? Were you a part of that? Did you get some water dumped on your head?
I was called out to do it, but I was a chicken. So I threw some money towards it because there was no way that I could do it.
Oh, that's cool. Well, good for you. Yeah, I did. Yeah, actually. And I called out some other friends. It was fun, actually. It was really fun. I had Hunter, my son, he dumped this, you know, ice on my head, which was fun. But that, you know, that thing raised $220 million for ALS, which is amazing. And actually, if you've been following that story, they're still, you know, on a regular basis, the ALS Foundation keeps coming out with like, hey, this discovery happened because of the ice bucket challenge, which is amazing. But even though that was 3 years ago, the cool thing was really, that didn't happen. That wouldn't have happened without smartphones. It wouldn't have happened without these little pieces of technology mm-hmm. in our pockets. Because it really, what it did is it allowed us to create content in video, and to share it quickly with our friends, which is a new day for us. That's kind of a new thing for humanity. And so, or, you know, you see this when, natural disasters, you know, blow through. So if there's a hurricane, we're kind of in the hurricane season now. And you know, the impact of those gets felt, you know, really widely. I have good friends of mine who live in Florida, and you know, very quickly you can gain access to what's happening on the ground because of smartphones. And so now it's really the combo of those two things, the kind of smartphone and this kind of relationship stuff together, that creates a new opportunity for us as a church. And so one of the things I talk about in the article is and some ideas there on how we can leverage that and really talk about developing social content that really people want to share, not really just advertisements about the church. So too many churches are doing the like, hey, come to church, and wondering why people aren't sharing that, as opposed to content that really the goal of it is for people to share it. The goal of it is to engage upon, you know, or to use that that content. Or another way to think about it is, like what the Ice Bucket Challenge did, was to encourage your people to develop their own content. You, you know, you see this at the most basic level with churches sharing hashtags, where they'll be like, this is our current series we're in, or this is what we're doing. And what you're encouraging people to do there is to, you know, to make some content, maybe take a picture, or, you know, do some a quote or something like that, and share the hashtag. And so the challenge for folks, church leaders that are listening in, is how can you leverage these phones in people's pockets to, for them to make content, for them to share with literally hundreds of people who are a click away, you know, from them, and right now, and even in the middle of your service.
Yeah, it's crazy to think how many people attend your service, and to think of how much engagement you can get out of each individual by just calling them out to use their phone.
Yeah, totally. Actually, you know, I was in a church a couple of weeks ago, Road to Life Church in Northwest Indiana. Is a great church, and they do something kind of cool in their services, where which really speaks to this point. What they do is they, in the middle of their hosting spot, they actually pull out their cell phone and they say, or smartphone, and say, hey, we want everyone to share this hashtag today. And then what they say is, for every 10 hashtags shared, they're going to make, and I think on that day it was a $10 donation to a orphanage in Haiti, and then they have a picture up on the screen. And so what they're trying to do is incentivize people. Hey, if you could please share something today, then, you know, we're going to gather those up and then ultimately make a donation to you know, to an orphanage. Which I thought was kind of a cool idea.
That's a really cool idea. Yeah. So so let's switch gears here, rewiring our minds from knowing answers to knowing how to find answers.
Okay, cool. So in this article, there's a number of resources linked to other articles if you want to dive deep. And this one actually has a great link in there to an article from Harvard. And it's, you know, again, this guy who did his PhD on this stuff is probably going to roll his eyes if you ever heard this. But really, the summation of it is that the human mind is changing, is shifting. This technology is changing the way our minds work. And what it's doing is it's shifting our minds from knowing facts to knowing where to find facts. And when I read this, I was like, this is totally me. Like, if I book an appointment, we book this appointment, you know, in my calendar. And I had forgot when we were doing it, whether it was this week or next week. And I was talking to my wife just yesterday, and I was like, you know, this thing's coming up. And because I had booked it in, I couldn't remember where it was. And, you know, and so for me, I realized that, you know, my mind is being rewired because I have access to literally all of human knowledge in the palm of my hand, which is ridiculous. And that is changing our people. And, you know, there was a time, the thing that got me thinking about this was, there was a time when the pastor was one of the most educated, if not the most educated person in a community, and was kind of the like dispenser of information. But that's not the case anymore. People have access to, you know, lots of information, you know, tons of information, and you know, we have to figure out how to deal with that, how to help them.
Yeah, definitely. I know that's true for me too. Like, I've been studying a lot lately for a couple of exams that I'm writing, and I was just saying to my husband how I can easily find the content in the textbook, but to recall it sitting in exam or like while I'm studying, I'm like, I don't know, where is it? I can just Google it, right? Isn't that why we have Google?
Right. It's true, right? And so that's happening. That is happening to people's minds. And so I think implications of that for us, you know, I think a big thing, and if you've hung around with me very long, you know, I say this lots, that, you know, preaching really needs to drive towards so what. It really, you know, people are overwhelmed with information. They have lots of facts. They're not looking for more facts in their life. What they are trying to do is to figure out what do I do with this information that I have? People still really don't care what it says in the Greek. They don't. And I know we like to do that every once in a while. Like, oh, it says this in the Greek. People don't care. What they care about.
Laugh so hard.
What's that? You laugh so hard?
I laughed so hard at this point because it's true. Yeah, we don't care.
They don't care. No. But what they do care is, what difference does this make? They're coming to us asking, okay, what difference does this teaching of Jesus make in my life? And how do we, you know, keep doing that? You know, I think the last thing too is we need to be probably more intellectually honest in our teaching than we've ever been. And I listen, I don't want to get on the bad side of any teachers who are listening in here today, but we all know that when, you know, all preaching is interpretation in one way or another, you're opening up the Bible and you are teaching from a perspective, and that's okay. Like, that's fine. Actually, you're leading from that perspective, and that's totally fine. But your people have access to a wide variety of perspectives, unlike what they have had even 10 years ago. They can look up quickly, even as you're teaching, they can look up a wide variety of other teachers and what their perspective is on this passage. And you have to, you have to acknowledge that. You have to be intellectually honest. So an example of that, a friend of mine, Dave Bowman from a New Horizon Church in North Carolina, again, the link's in this article, recently did this, it was a great kickoff to a series. And in there's one part of the message that I link to where he kind of refers to, I believe it's 8 different approaches to kind of what's happening in Genesis chapter 1. And, it was a great explanation of, you know, here are how various Christian thinkers have thought about these. And then he presented like, hey, this is where I come down. This is where I land, as opposed to presenting it saying, this is the way that everyone who's a Christian thinks about Genesis chapter 1. You know, there are other Christians or other Christ followers who love Jesus dearly who do have a different, you know, perspective on this. And I think we have to do more of that teaching as we, you know, and particularly because people have access to so much information.
Yeah, absolutely. So do you find that your smartphone is driving you to get more done?
Yeah. So this is the third point. Yes. So this is, I found this study. It actually, again, it astonished me. There was a study done just a couple years ago. Again, the link's in the notes, that found that on average, heavy smartphone users are getting 22 days more of work done in every year. So, which is amazing. Now, I think some of that's true. Now, to be honest, and again, I apologize for people who are, you know, may not like this joke, but there, a lot of this is really in the bathroom. You know, I find people are, and I know everyone says that they don't use their smartphone in the bathroom, but I think that's not true. You know, and so it's true. People are getting a lot more done. That's just true. That we're more time conscious than we've ever been before. People, you know, really, people are probably more time conscious than they are money conscious. You'll hear lots of people say things like, you can get more money, you can't get more time. And so I think these devices are driving us to be more, you know, conscious of how we use every minute of the day. And so we can't waste people's time. We need to make sure that when we're meeting together, when we're calling into a meeting, that we're leveraging that time well. We're making a compelling and relevant reason and experience for them, you know, to be there. You know, we also, another piece of this, you know, I think for folks is to help really even teach on time stewardship. For years I've thought, you know, churches talk a lot, or some churches will do like money stuff where they'll do like, we want to help you be a steward of your money. But actually, I haven't heard a lot of churches ever teach on time stewardship. How do you use the time that God's given you to honor him and to, you know, kind of get the most out of life? Actually, one of the things I loved about Karen Newhoff, our lead pastor, earlier this year did a series just on that. And, you know, was talking all about how do we leverage our time, which I thought was pretty unique. And, you know, it would be a good reference for people to go back and listen to if they're interested.
Yeah, no, that was a great series. And just how to block your time. Like, I mean, that's critical, right? Because most of us don't feel like we have enough
right
time in the day to get anything done. Absolutely. I mean, I'm a mom and I don't feel like there's any time in the world.
true.
So fantastic. We're not bored anymore. You're not bored?
Well, so this is interesting. Smartphones, what have they done? They have taken boredom out of our lives. There used to be moments where you just didn't know, you like literally nothing was happening, and you are, you know, you just, you would now, we fill it with, you know, some video game, or we fill it with a podcast, or we fill it with checking Facebook or whatever. And that, so what's happened is boredom is being kind of expunged out of our lives. Now, there's a fascinating podcast done by WNYC called Bored and Brilliant, which is was really trying to drive people back to boredom, saying like, actually, boredom's an important part of your life. And so again, you'll see, you know, in the article, I link to that and link to some of the resources. They have this great video that they did. Did you watch that video, Vanessa?
I didn't.
Yeah, so you should go back and watch it. It's an interesting video of, it's in New York City, and it's watching people as they walk down the road, and it's saying how many people can walk without their smartphone in hand. And so, it's fun to watch because people really can't. It's become such a part of what we do. So, you know, and the interesting thing to me on this part, and this is, was, you know, of the 7 was the one that's probably, you know, although there's a lot here, it's kind of a little bit of an unformed thought, because I'm not a spiritual director. I don't pretend to, you know, necessarily be an expert in discipleship. But the thought that's been going on in my head around this is, you know, finding a way to actually leverage silence, I know in my own spiritual walk, is a piece of what God wants to do. That, like, actually slowing down and not doing anything is actually a part of the way we can grow as an individual. And so the problem with that is smartphones have taken that away. So there's this guy, Brother Lawrence, years ago, 500 years ago, who he kind of tell this, you know, famous story of him washing dishes, and he would use that time to pray and connect with God. Well, today, you know, I think if Brother Lawrence was around, he would have his smartphone on and would be listening to a podcast like this and wouldn't have that opportunity. And so what is that doing to spiritual development and, you know, kind of spiritual disciplines is the kind of the question I'm raising here. And so I actually went through and developed kind of what if we challenged people to boredom, or challenge people to silence, really is what it is. And I kind of came up with a 5-day quick challenge there, which you can read about online. But, you know, the idea is, you know, like day one would be on a bus, train, or sidewalk, as, you know, keep your phone in your pocket instead of pulling it out. You know, so you're going to go for a walk today, instead of taking your phone out and looking at it, what if you just kept it in your pocket and actually just noticed people around you? Believe it or not, everywhere we go, there are actually people. And it kind of walks through ultimately up to day 5, which I this particular idea I stole from that Bored and Brilliant podcast, but they talk about, you know, get out a large pot of water and literally just watch it boil a pot of water.
Have you watched a pot boil before?
It's ridiculously boring.
It's like watching paint dry.
Exactly. It's the same thing. And so, but the idea there is what if, well, first of all, if you do that, you know, what are the thoughts that bubble to the front of your head? Why is it that you want to think about those things, and why, and what is it about your phone that you'd rather be doing than, you know, than this now? So it's just a kind of a little bit of a tongue in cheek. There's a 5-day kind of challenge that you might be able to pass along to your people.
Yeah, no, I thought the 5-day challenge was brilliant. It gave me horrible anxiety thinking about 5 days without my phone.
Yes.
Because there's so much dependence on it. Yes. Like, do you forget your phone somewhere and be like, oh my gosh, I've lost my head?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, it's amazing how, like, it actually, you doesn't take long. Like, if I don't know where my phone is for 30 seconds, how quickly the anxiety raises up. Like, in fact, actually just last night was out for dinner with my wife and put the phone on the table and went to the bathroom. And as I was walking to the bathroom, I actually got thinking about this, this point. As I was walking to the bathroom, I thought, oh, I don't have my phone on me. And then I was like, the second thought came over me was like, why do I need my phone to go to the bathroom? Like, I don't need it.
So you could be more productive.
Exactly. I could, as I'm walking right now, I could be checking on what Donald Trump said or something. I don't know. So,
true. That's something good to check on.
It's kind of a fun thing. So.
So you say it's impossible to get lost now. I know this point's true for us and our family.
Yeah. So the GPS on all of our phones is changing the way people interact with the world around them. Absolutely. And, you know, churches are, you know, fundamentally, a retail business, for lack of a better word. We do what we do in physical space, you know, in places. And so I'm a little bit of a car nerd. My dad was although I don't really like cars, I think the impact that the car has had on culture is interesting to think about. My dad was, an automotive parts supply for most of his working career. And so I think some of that wore off on me. But, you know, the kind of mega church movement, this idea of large churches, you know, larger than 2,000 people, really only exist because of the car. They don't exist before that. Before that, people just literally walked to the church around the corner from them, the idea of the local parish. And so it took about 50 years, but 50 years after the kind of in the pervasiveness of the car, the mega church was born. So the question I'm asking here is, now that no longer will we get lost because we all have GPS, what difference is that going to make on church attendance? And I think it's going to have, you know, profound, you know, experience. It's going to change the way where churches, you know, put churches. There used to be a time where there was kind of a rule of thumb was, you know, your church needs to be no more than 2 turns from an interstate highway or from a large highway. You know, and the reason why that was is because you wanted it to be found. You want to be easy to find, where, you know, I think that's becoming less of a reality. And what difference is it going to make? I don't know. And so I ask a couple questions there around, you know, I think being found online is super important. Being, you know, if people search you on Google and your address doesn't come up on there, that's like, you know, being way off the interstate. You know, it's like being way off the highway. And so you've got to work harder on that. You've got to be able to be found on people's smartphones and, you know, and a few other things. So what did you think at that point? It's a little bit esoteric and it's a bit strange, let's be honest.
No, it's not. I think it's the reality, right? Is that, you know, I can rationalize 10 minutes, right? If I know what's going to be there is going to be good when I get there.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and if I can shop online first to see what I'm going to walk into, I'm more likely to drive that extra 10 minutes knowing what I'm going to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true. That's absolutely. It's true. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. So content availability is expected. So do you find that, you know, you get those texts all the time and like people just don't care about what you're doing. They want to be able to get at you.
Yeah. So I think this is true, right? The little red dots on our iPhones that tell us that we have, you know, a new message, you know, has come in, that is changing people's expectations around customer service. You know, this idea that, it gets a little bit back to the fact that we're a retail business, for lack of a better word, that we have to be available on, you know, more than just on Sundays. There was a time, I remember when I started in ministry 20 years ago, you know, there was this idea that, like, you know, church kind of happened on Sunday and you would see the pastor there, and then maybe you would do like a midweek service. But there was a lot of like, where were the church leaders the rest of the week? Like, what did they do? You know, and that I think is becoming less of a reality. Churches need to be more accessible throughout the entire week, and we need to leverage the technologies that are there to help people get connected with us and to stay, you know. And here I talk about being ridiculously responsive, which a friend of mine organization, that's one of their values, being ridiculously responsive. And so there's some examples. The one in there that I kind of have bumped into, and these are some tools, again, you'll see in the full article, there's some tools I list if you're looking for ways for your church to be more ridiculously responsive. Well, the one in there that just to pull out is this cool one called Bonjoro, which is a really cool tool. It's designed for really software companies originally who are onboarding new users. And what it does is it makes it very easy for a business to send a quick video email to people. And so, like at our church, when you come as a first time guest, we send out, actually our lead pastor, Jeff, or Jeremy, one of our campus pastors, sends out an email, actually a video email, to those guests and say, hey, we're so glad you came. And they'll reference them and hopefully they've had a chance to talk to them. And like, this is so great. Well, it takes a couple steps to send that out. It's actually a little bit of a mechanical process to make that happen. Well, what Bonjoro does is it literally just shows up. It'll basically just a notification ends up on your phone and you can record a quick email and then hit send, and it'll prepackage the email and send it out to guests. It would be, I know of at least one church that's using it as a tool to kind of help their onboarding process. Again, just another way to kind of be, responsive and using this technology to be responsive to people.
I think that's more personal too, right? Because now you're connecting with a face versus words, right? Absolutely. And I think that's huge, right? Absolutely. Because then when you go to church on Sunday, it's going to be easier to see that person, right? And develop that relationship. So I think we use it at my work. We use BombBombs and we love them. We send them like crazy.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. So BombBomb is another, it is a tool. That's actually what we use at the church too. And Bonjoro really it's just a competitor really to that, to that tool. So that's great.
So access to robust content providers.
All right. So there's an interesting thing here, where people now in your church there used to be a time where you would come and they would just hear your message. And like you got up and preached on Sunday and that was it. Where now what's happened with the pervasiveness of other, you know, churches' podcasts, with the, you know, the ability for people to tap into what's going on, into other, you know, thought leaders. They're connected with multiple people who, you know, want to explain scripture to them throughout the entire week, but it's more than just content. So I used to say, you know, it's interesting, like podcasts have made it so I can really listen to any church's message. And although that's true, it's even more than that, because what's happened is as these have woven together, people feel like they're developing close relationships with these content providers. And so, you know, you'll have, you know, pastors who, you know, you may listen to their podcast, but then you'll also follow them on Instagram and then maybe also on Facebook. And, you know, and that content is kind of constantly washing over you, actually developing a closer connection to, you know, to your to people. And so for us as church leaders, we need to realize that that's happening. It's not like something to compete against. It's not like, oh, that's something bad, but realize we should be doing that with our people. We should be not just looking at how do we distribute our content online, but how are we leveraging our phone to share a bit of what's going on in our lives throughout the entire week to really scale up our personal connection with people. Vanessa, do you follow anybody, you know, listen to their podcast or anything like that's outside of, you know, your church? And do you follow them on Instagram or anything like that? Or do you kind of see this last point?
Yeah, totally. So I follow, I'm so glad you asked me this, 'cause I was just thinking about this. I love Clay Scroggins.
Yeah.
Like I follow him and I swear, I feel like I am his best friend.
Yeah.
Like he has an Insta story up and I am like instantly watching it. 'Cause I think he's hilarious. He's a fantastic leader. And I just love what he has to say.
Totally.
And, I feel connected to him, right? I don't know him. I think I met him once when I was at North Point, but, and now I seek to find him so I can be like, yo, that barbecue you made looked amazing. Or like, your kids are hilarious. Like,
yes.
It's just an interesting way to create a personal brand for yourself that people can identify with.
Absolutely. So now the interesting thing about it, that's a perfect example, right? It's more than just, you know, hearing him speak every once in a while. You're seeing what's going on with his kids or whatever. That kind of relationship is new for people in your church. And, you know, they haven't been able to do that until really the kind of pervasiveness of you know, the smartphone. It's made it very easy to make those kind of connections. And so the challenge for me is, I think there are a lot of, unfortunately, there are a lot of church leaders that are resistant to social media. They're resistant to leveraging this technology. And you need to not do that. You need to stop doing that and actually, you know, use this technology to help and connect with your people.
And it kind of humanizes you as well, right?
Yeah, like, absolutely.
We see you on stage on Sunday, but then like, hey, I want to see what you do for exercise or what you're eating and
totally. What
you like to do, what you get enjoyment from. So
absolutely.
I find it super fascinating.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So we hit all of our final point, all of our points, 7 points. So do you have any final words for us before we sign off, Rich?
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes the church can be seen as resistant to new technology. We can be seen as people who, you know, we try to push back against technology. And I think that's a mistake. I think we're missing out on that. Although I said at the beginning, I wasn't trying to be negative or like super rah-rah. If you've listened to this point, you've probably picked up on that. I think the phone or the smartphone, I debated whether you just call it a phone, because I don't even know that people call them smartphones anymore. You know, this technology, really, we should be looking for ways to integrate into that. It goes back to, even there was this guy, this preacher in Chicago, Moody, who, when the electric light first came out, he actually got electric lights installed in his church and started doing evening services so that people would come and see the electric light and then he could talk to them about Jesus. And I just love that. I think that's a great example. And we should be thinking about the same thing with the use of our phones. How can we leverage this technology to ultimately see people get connected to Christ?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing to think of the relationships that are out there that you can connect with, right? And I mean, people are going to check you out on Facebook before they step foot in your church. So
absolutely. Why
not leverage it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thanks for tuning in. You can see the full article and all of our other podcasts at unseminary.com. We'll see you then.
Thanks so much.